financial arrangement with him in the first place. They parted bitterly, for she truly had loved him for a time. But the love had withered into a painful husk of resentment and regret. While they were together, Anita had never looked at another man, not even Morgan's handsome young son. Morgan McClintock immediately found another mistress, a younger one. Anita found an even richer man, an older one, Brian Halleck, and this time she married him. The Earthview Restaurant. Her last night in Cellini before she returned to Earth, Anita was invited to dinner at the Earthview Restaurant by Douglas Stavanger and his wife. Anita was delighted by the invitation and pleasantly surprised by the restaurant. Most of Cellini reminded Anita of Coober Pedy, the opal mining town in South Australia that had been carved out of the multi-hued veins of opal, underground where the residents could escape the summer's blistering heat. But where the opal-rich stone of Coober Pedy was bright and colorful, Cellini was drab. The lunar rock was mostly shades of gray, and the endless corridors and chambers were dismally narrow, their ceilings depressingly low. The Earthview Restaurant was very different. It had started as a huge natural cave, but the residents of Cellini had enlarged and improved it in every way. There were five tiers of tables, with winding rampways connecting them. The plastic tablecloths, manufactured from lunar raw materials, looked and felt like crisp white linen. Cellini-made tableware and wine glasses sparkled on every table in the light of lamps designed to flicker like candles. Human waiters in dark suits and squat little robot aides moved up and down the ramps with quiet efficiency. The smoothed rock walls supported sweeping flat screens that showed the view outside on the floor of the giant ring-walled plain of Alphonsus, the stark barren grandeur of the pitted, dusty lunar surface with the gorgeous blue and white beauty of Earth hanging in the utterly black sky. A dark-clad waiter led Anita to the table where Douglas Stavanger and his wife were already seated. Stavanger rose and introduced, "This is my wife, Edith. Edith, meet Anita Halleck." As Halleck took the chair the waiter was holding for her, she stared at blonde, smiling Mrs. Stavanger and asked, "Aren't you Edie Elgin, the newscaster?" Edith's smile brightened. "I used to be. Haven't done much lately. I'm sort of retired. But it's good to be recognized. I've enjoyed the newscasts you've done from Cellini." Douglas Stavanger asked, "How do you like the restaurant, Mrs. Halleck?"
"Please call me Anita."
"Fine. And I'm Doug." Pointing to his wife, Stavanger added, "But she's Edith. Edie is just for the newsnets."
"Very well, then," said Anita. "Edith."
"So what do you think of this place?" he asked again, full of youthful eagerness.
"It's spectacular. I didn't expect anything so opulent."
"It's our one luxury here in Cellini," Stavanger said, grinning. Then he added, "Well, this and the swimming pool up in the main plaza."
"I can see why people want to come up here after they've retired," Halleck said.
"Too many of them," Stavanger said, sobering. "More than we can handle."
Edith said, "We're building new living spaces for them, but there's still lots more applying for residency than we can make room for."
"They're running away from the disasters back Earthside," Stavanger muttered. A human waiter took their orders, and their food and drinks were delivered by one of the little flat-topped robots that trundled nimbly among the tables. "I understand you've been talking with Dr. Cardenas," Stavanger prompted, between bites of his catfish fillets.
"Yes," said Halleck. "We're going to see if her nanomachines can build the mirror segments we need."
"For the big telescopes you're going to hang out in space," Edith said. "Interferometer," Halleck corrected silently as she nodded at Mrs. Stavanger. But then she thought, well, they actually are telescopes, aren't they? We'll simply be using them differently.
"Chris's bugs will build your mirror," said Stavanger. "She's a wonder with nanotechnology."
Halleck heard herself ask, "Doesn't it worry you? Just a bit?"
"Worry? About nanomachines?"
"Yes. You're a completely enclosed community here. If some of those nanobugs got loose, they could destroy everything, couldn't they? Wipe you out. Kill everyone."
Stavanger glanced at his wife before answering. Then, in very measured tones, he replied, "That is a possibility, of course.
That's why we're very careful with nanomachines. We have very strict safeguards in place. The only time we've had any problems was when someone deliberately tried to kill people with nanomachines.
Your father was murdered by them, wasn't he?
Halleck asked. My father was murdered by a madman who used nanomachines as the murder weapon, yes, Stavanger said tightly. Edith chimed in.
You might as well say that guns kill people on Earth.
Well, they do, don't they?
Only if some killer uses them to commit murder. Halleck pointed out.
That's why so many nations on Earth have banned gun ownership.
You think nanotech should be banned here in Selene the way it is on Earth? Stavanger challenged.
Halleck sidestepped with, If it were, I wouldn't be able to get my mirrors built by nanomachines.
Hunching over the table toward her, Stavanger said earnestly, We need nanotechnology here. Nanomachines pull the oxygen we breathe out of the regolith. They manufacture water for us.
But you were refining oxygen from the regolith and manufacturing water before you started using nanotechnology, weren't you?
Yes, he admitted. But it was much more expensive and limited. We could never have expanded Selene to the size it is today without nanotechnology.
Yes, I see.
Nanotechnology saves lives, too, you know, Stavanger went on. Nanomachines have saved my life. More than once.
I see, Halleck repeated.
So it's true, she thought. His body's filled with nanomachines, too. Edith made a bright smile and said,
We've made a deal with the little bugs, Anita. They help us, and we keep them under control.
It's worked very well for us, Stavanger added. Trying to make her voice light, pleasant, Halleck said,
I understand. You've done very well with nanotechnology.
And she thought that nanotechnology was going to be very useful to her as well. Visits. While they waited for Cardenas to confirm that she could build Farside's mirrors with nanomachines, for nearly a week Grant found himself buried in paperwork. There was little work going on outside, but now that he was head of the tech staff, Grant found that there was plenty of record-keeping, schedule-fixing, work-shift adjusting to be done. Once he had dismissed such tasks as nothing more than paper-shuffling, not that they used paper, everything was done digitally, but Grant began to understand that without the paperwork, the real work could not be done. And then there were the personnel problems. Personality problems, really. Harvey Henderson returned from Selene, but his foot was still on the mend. He couldn't work outside. Josie Rivera was flirting with several guys at the same time, causing lots of resentment. Grant remembered the days when he had first started taking hefty doses of steroids, and his chemically induced aggression had led him into roaring arguments and even battering brawls. And while he sweated over records and schedules, the damned cracked mirror just lay there on the dusty ground, absorbing hard radiation from the sun and stars, and being slowly abraded by the constant hail of dust mote-sized micrometeorites falling to the moon's surface. The sun was touching the ringwall mountains of Mare Moscoviense. Grant knew that once the two-week-long lunar night settled across the giant crater's floor, the mirror's glass would begin to contract in the cold, and its crack would worsen. He tried to get Ulrich to okay building a roof over the mirror to protect it from the meteoroid infall, but the professor kept delaying that decision. When Grant complained to McClintock that nothing was being done, he told Grant to be patient. "Your job here is safe as long as you keep your nose clean," McClintock said daily. "Don't antagonize Ulrich, and follow my orders." Grant said nothing, but he thought that it was more important to get the job done and done right than to pussyfoot around the ulcer or wait for this playboy to make decisions that were clearly beyond his understanding. He spoke several times with Christine Cardenas back at Selene, checking on the progress of her effort to build the telescope mirror with nanomachines. He had another motive for keeping in touch with her. He desperately wanted Dr. Cardenas to inject him with a set of nanomachines tailored to repair his damaged liver and protect him from radiation effects once he began working out on the surface again. He was growing more impatient, more apprehensive with each passing day. The dull ache in the small of his back seemed to be getting worse. Grant knew he faced an increasingly desperate conundrum. He needed the steroids he'd been taking so that he could work out on the surface, but those steroids were damaging his liver, perhaps